I think there's nothing more beautiful than people singing their hearts. So you all have Black Friday here? The day after Thanksgiving, after a day of indulging ourselves, we go out and buy stuff. People stand in line at the stroke of midnight, and I don't know if this has happened here, but in Massachusetts, some stores actually opened on Thanksgiving Day so that folks could go out and buy stuff. And there were like shoving matches, right, that would happen because somebody wanted to, you know, get the new Nintendo or whatever. And a few years ago, one store advertised that they would not open on Thanksgiving so that their employees could enjoy the day with their families. And that seemed like a courageous move, which, I mean, it was, right? Other people were open and they were closed, but that just struck me as there was something wrong with this picture, right? That the store that stayed closed on Thanksgiving was exceptional. And yet in this very commercial culture that we find ourselves in, it is extraordinary, isn't it, that there's one day of the year, an entire day that is dedicated to giving thanks. I can't imagine that it would be invented now, right? The day of Thanksgiving. President Lincoln saw its importance in the middle of a deadly, divisive civil war. Some might say we're in the midst of a pretty divisive and even deadly time now. But Lincoln called for a national holiday. And interestingly, the Civil War brought us another holiday, right? The Memorial Day. At a time when the country had been pulled apart, a shared experience of mourning, those lost in the case of Memorial Day, excuse me, and if, why am I saying excuse me? I'm saying excuse me because I was distracted. And of giving thanks for our blessings on Thanksgiving. A national holiday could bring us back together, Lincoln thought. But the idea of gratitude seems like kind of a luxury, don't you think? I mean, with so much suffering in the world, the violence, the shootings, more every day, war, natural disaster, illness, some of these things present in our own lives, some of us still reeling from the economic downturns of now several years ago. What do we have to be grateful for? Isn't gratitude really just for the wealthy, for the fortunate, for the privileged? Someone once wrote these words: in spite of everything, I still believe that people are really good at heart. I simply can't build up my hopes on a foundation consisting of confusion, misery, and death. I still believe that people are really good at heart. Those words were written by Anne Frank. In her diary, a young girl hiding from the Nazis with her family, she later died in a concentration camp, she still held the belief that people are really good at heart. What did Anne Frank have to be grateful for, to be hopeful about? She endured great suffering. Certainly she saw people at their worst and also at their best. And she chose to focus on those aspects of humanity, the kindness, the generosity, the risk-taking of those who helped her and her family. Yunmi Park was 13 when she and her mother fled North Korea. You might have heard her story a few years ago. Her father was in trouble with the authorities and was taken away. Her older sister had left a few days before, and it would be 2 years before Yunmi and her mother could find her older sister. Yunmi left, she says, because she was starving to death. She weighed 60 pounds when she left. a 13-year-old girl weighed 60 pounds when she left, and somehow she and her mother made it to China, but there she was sold into a forced marriage and experienced great suffering, great cruelty. She eventually made it to safety, came to the U.S., eventually, and she convinced her captor to help her find and liberate her father, who had been arrested some years before. I heard her interviewed on the radio by Terry Gross, of course, and what moved me to go out and buy her book and learn more about her story was that she expressed gratitude to that man for helping her eventually, after all his cruelty. She was grateful to him for helping to reunite her family, and then he helped them to get to South Korea and eventually to the West. Gratitude. Did that man deserve her gratitude? It wasn't about him. It wasn't about him, it was about her. She chose to be grateful, and it helped her move forward and write a new story. Now, neuroscientists believe that some people are predisposed to be more grateful, more optimistic, but others believe that being grateful is good for us and that it can be learned. So let's try an experiment. I want you to sit back and relax for a moment and now think of something that really annoys you. Big or small, it doesn't matter. Something that really ticks you off. Now, on a scale of 1 to 10, how do you feel? Low, low number. All right, now relax again. And think of something for which you are grateful, also big or small. I'm going to take a risk here, and I'm going to invite you to turn to your neighbor and tell them something that you're grateful for. It's risky because it's always hard to bring people back once you let them talk to each other. But turn to your neighbor and share something that you're grateful for. Just briefly, a word or two. Was everyone able to think of something? Okay, that's enough. We can continue this, and I hope we will, at coffee hour. So how do you feel now? Better? Science. So let's try this. I invite you to join me, those of you who aren't already doing this, in a practice of daily gratitude. Each night before you drift off to sleep or at another time of day that works for you, just notice one or two or three things for which you are grateful. Write them down if you wish, or just let them enter your consciousness. If you pray, give a prayer of thanks. And if you wish, tell others what you are grateful for by text or tweet or email or on Facebook or even over a cup of tea in person. Tell me. Tell each other. Now, what if I'm just not feeling it? Not feeling grateful. That will happen. That's what makes it a practice. Try. Find something that touches you, something beautiful, familiar, or maybe extraordinary. I heard an interview once with someone who does wilderness rescue, like when skiers are lost, there's an avalanche, or hikers. And the interviewer asked, you know, how do you stay calm in the face of this emergency? And he said, well, one thing I've learned is that these disasters often take place in an area of great beauty, right? This snow-covered mountain, trees. So one of the first things I do is to take a breath and just take in the vista of the beauty around me, and that settles me and allows me to do my work. And that stayed with me, and that actually has informed my practice of gratitude, which I certainly engage in every evening, but sometimes I find myself in need of a little gratitude during the day. To take a breath, to take in the beauty around me. And you saw that happen to me sitting up here on the chancel as the choir began to sing. I was just overwhelmed with the beauty of their music and the love I feel for all of you. I am so grateful to be here serving as your minister in this time. And to just name that feels good. So take the time to notice the color of the sky as you drive home from work, the drawing your grandchild made for you, that first sip of coffee in the morning, the feeling of the soft pillow under your head, a laugh with a friend, a shaft of sunlight at the end of a dark afternoon, a note and music and ice cream. Ice cream is important. Focusing on the good won't make the bad go away. And it won't by itself heal the world's suffering, but it lets us write the story of who and how we will be in the world. And that makes us stronger and healthier and better equipped to meet the challenges and the joy that await us. In this time of increasing darkness, as we approach winter, let us await the return of the light with hope and with gratitude.